What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens, families, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Lauren Polly's The Other Side of Bipolar, Revealing Your Strengths to Move Beyond the Diagnosis, walks with the author as she journeys to move past mental illness, shedding shame, self-judgment, or inner gate. The book invites a radical new perspective that allows one to live beyond the label. Lauren, welcome to 411 Teen.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, yeah, I look forward to talking with you. You have such invaluable information that you can share. Your book was really a powerful journey through the recognition and growth and evolution of self. What was the impetus for your book?
I think the impetus was me having more and more conversations with people in my life and my living about what I had been through in my past. And I had started doing my life coaching practice up until that point, and I was finding more and more clients who may have been diagnosed with a mental illness formally or just really suffered from some of the signs and the symptoms or just feeling wrong or lost in the world. So I had discovered the more I was able to share about my journey and all of the steps that I took to work my way out of the diagnosis trap, so to speak, only identifying with that one thing, and really moving into a more life-affirming stance with myself, it really opened up their eyes and gave them kind of this inspirational kick to be able to move forward for themselves. And then multiple people were saying, oh, wow, if you wrote a book about that, that would be such a gift to the world and for other people struggling with a broader audience. So I took that to heart and moved forward.
Well, I think it is really a gift to the world. It helps those who are not as in touch realize just what that walk is, what that journey was about. And I think in turn, that tells us the significance of the title, right? You want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, absolutely. The Other Side of Bipolar. And for me, the other side is the one where you stop judging yourself. And this is huge for anyone who has a label or a diagnosis put on them. There is this inner judgment that we go through with ourselves of, I'm not normal. Mm-hmm. I don't fit in, and something's wrong with me, especially with a bipolar label, something's inherently biologically wrong with me. And then there's all of the social stigma that comes with it. So there's judgment from the outside that gets layered on top of it, which makes interactions and relationships and social, kind of social interactions much more challenging. So for me, the other side of bipolar is really walking people to this place where you stop judging yourself because you have something that just makes you different. And if difference wasn't a wrongness, it was just different, how could you utilize that difference to actually create a life and a living that you love?
Well, I would think that that particular point would be a real challenge for someone who is an adolescent. And yours started in adolescence, correct?
Yes, I was diagnosed when I was 14 years old. So the majority of my adolescence was colored, I would say, and filtered through this diagnosis. And so you have all the normal ups and downs of teenage years, which is, oh my goodness, hard in of itself. And then layering this on top of it, when all you really want to do is find where you fit in social settings, in society, really, kind of having a glaring red flag in your own world of, wow, I'm different, and I have to handle myself very differently here. It added a whole other layer of judgment and really filters that a lot of the other teens who weren't dealing with it didn't really have to face.
How are you able to cope with that? Because adolescence alone presents a number of challenges and, seeking one's identity and feeling comfortable with self. And then to have that label and the changes that you were going through coupled on that. What did you do? How did you manage?
Yeah, It was tricky, but I was very fortunate that I had a very open relationship with my parents. Mm-hmm. So that was a wonderful support network. I always felt like I could at least go home and not be judged by them,
mm-hmm.
which in of itself was a massive gift because that's at least half of my time. The troubling time for me was really during school hours and being in the midst of all the peer pressure and the interestingness that goes along with it. I found a lot of solace in artistic therapy, so art therapy. I was a dancer. I got involved in drama. And I really seeked out different opportunities to be able to find a sense of space and peace for myself, for one, kind of a safe zone. Mm-hmm. I'd say that was kind of my number one target. And then from there, looking at ways that I could play in my artistic realm, in my expression, where I got a sense of relief, which I think is huge for any adolescent, not just mm-hmm. those that are labeled
Indeed.
With a diagnosis, finding a safe space where they can express themselves, not be judged, and really find a release for whatever's going on in their inner world, which is very rich and deep.
Well, written in the first person, I think that particularly allows the reader to experience the changes that you experienced. Can you share with us when you first became aware that something was happening?
It was when I was diagnosed when I was 14. I would say the bigger warning signs, quote-unquote, were more 13.
Mm-hmm.
So I had about a year where I didn't quite know what was going on. I wasn't sure if something was wrong with me, something was wrong with the world. The way I speak about mental illness and mental angst in general is having a very loud perception of the world. And this is something that we innately all have as children. And then we move into our teen years and all of a sudden you're not okay to explore and be different and to play. There's this need to fit in and conform. And when you have a depth of perception about yourself,
mm-hmm.
and the layers that are there, and then also the world that around you, it gets kind of confusing to see, how am I supposed to interact with these people? Where is it that I can actually be myself and actually have a sense of space? And for me, that's where it really got tricky, of like, I would be interacting with someone and they would be saying something pleasing or something nice, they'd be smiling at me, but underneath it, I could tell they didn't like me.
Mm-hmm.
Or I would be speaking with someone who seemed perfectly fine in the moment, but I could sense their inner pain. There's a depth of perception that we have with each other, and if you're more sensitive, it can get very confusing at that stage of, like, what do I interact to? Is the surface stuff where everyone else is, or those deeper layers, and how do you handle your awareness of those deeper layers? Without tools and techniques, it's easy to kind of feel crazy amidst all that.
Well, it seems like you had a hypersensitivity.
Yeah.
To exactly what was happening in your world and in your interactions with others.
I think that's a beautiful term, and I think that's something that a lot of people could probably speak to. The folks that have read the book already have noticed, you know, even if I wasn't diagnosed, you said I actually can relate so much to the mm-hmm. sensations you spoke of like interacting with someone and having your stomach turn over or feeling kind of queasy or feeling just very uncomfortable in a group of people because the noise was so intense. You had a hard time finding your thoughts. I think this is a bigger thing that a lot of us deal with, some with more success than others, but during the teen years especially, it just seems like it kind of gets heightened at that time.
Well, you've shared some of the warning signs. Are there anything else that you could share with the listening audience, you know, for parents or the teens who may be experiencing some of these indicators?
Yeah, well, I would say the feeling of being lost, I think, is probably something that most of us, you know, whether you're a teen or an adult, can relate to. And then also this kind of feeling of, like, people are talking about you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very thankful that I went through middle school before social media was out and about, because now I think the bullying, or at least the perception of being bullied or talked about behind your back or someone just watching you all the time
mm-hmm.
is so heightened. There just doesn't seem to be a release from it now. When I was a teenager, it was before that happened. It was more heightened during the school hours. I always felt like there were people watching me, people talking about me behind my back. it got very, almost like a trigger. Like if someone would whisper in class, I would get triggered thinking, oh my God, they hate me, they're talking about me. And immediately I would shut down. And that's where a lot of my kind of suicidal tendencies and ideations came from, really thinking that people didn't like me, I didn't really belong in the world anyway, maybe it would be better just to end it all and check out.
Well, the traditional clinician would say that you were paranoid, that's all, that you were experienced paranoia, and may frown on the idea that you were just more in touch and hypersensitive and able to connect with what was happening around you.
Well, I think that's the beautiful talking point, and there just seems to be so much more of an opening with people who are more open-minded like yourself and a lot of the professionals of, yes, it might be classified traditionally as paranoia, and I can get that from a medical perspective, but if we can change the perception of that label and actually go, wow, you're hypersensitive, you're very aware, you're very in tune, we take the wrongness and the judgment off of it. And by doing that, we actually open space for the person to be empowered to utilize that. And I think that's what stuck me for so long, is thinking that I was paranoid, I was bipolar, I had hallucinations. There were all these labels that were wrong, wrong, wrong. When I was starting to do this deeper work in terms of looking at myself in a broader perspective and letting go of the judgment and the label, I was able to start accessing the gifts that hide in that. And I think that's a really cool conversation. How can we empower our teenagers and our adults going through this and not make them wrong and stick them with a label for the rest of their life?
How did the receiving the label actually impact you? I mean, once you were diagnosed, and we'll talk about the diagnosis process, but once you were diagnosed, did you find that receiving that label changed or altered your perspective of self and altered the way that you interacted, altered the way that you perceive things? Or were you, how did you get to a point that you were able to have a different take on that?
Yeah, and that was a long journey, and that's what the book walks through with me, and the hopes and the inspiration that you can walk along with me for yourself and for your loved ones. When I was diagnosed initially at 14, it changed everything. It changed for my family dynamics, because these diagnoses don't just happen to the individual, they happen to everyone in the family unit.
Hold your thoughts for a moment. We're going to take a brief break. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and I'm talking with Lauren Polly, the author of The Other Side of Bipolar, Revealing Your Strengths to Move Beyond the Diagnosis. Lauren, I had to interrupt you, but you were sharing with us how that label impacted you once you got the label of bipolar, how it impacted your relationship with your family. Would you continue, please?
Yes, this is the kind of bigger perspective that gets lost a whole lot, is that these diagnoses, they don't just happen to the individual, they actually happen to the entire family. Mm-hmm. If someone has a mental illness or is going through a big upset like that, everyone in their life, there's like a ripple effect, everyone's impacted. And so when I was labeled as such and given the diagnosis, it not only changed my perception of myself, it changed the way the people in my life perceived me. And then me, again, being hypersensitive, I was so aware of their changes in perception of me that I then, again, distorted my own perception of myself further. So it's this ripple effect of when people start walking on eggshells around you, treating you differently, the person who's going through that, they take note of it. And then they start going, wow, I must really be super uber fragile for someone to have to be so gentle with me. Mm-hmm. And they may start acting as such. So that's just something, if you are having a teen who's dealing with this now, how can you be interacting with them in a way that empowers them? which my family certainly did, but I think we all just kind of got freaked out at that moment that that label was passed down. Kind of natural human human emotions kick in of like, oh my goodness, this seems like a big, big thing. And all the forewarnings that came from the doctors of like, you know, it's hereditary. If you have children, you'll pass it on to them. You won't be able to handle stress well. You need medication. If you're not on medication or even if you are on it, you may still cycle and have big upsets. Don't challenge yourself too much. They just painted this picture that really created, it took my dreams of what I could really offer the world and tamped them down to such a degree because I didn't think I could handle it and go there anymore. And to give that to a young one, it's devastating. It's devastating for their self-esteem and where they'd like to go in the future.
Well, I know at one point you did share what was going on with you. And how did that impact your life with your friends? You noted that they, you know, may have looked at you differently. But what was going on when you decided to share? Because I know your father started warning you. Maybe you might want to think about how much information you share with people.
It was actually a title called It's Not Safe to Share. And it's fascinating because it walks me through right after my diagnosis. I started to share it in youth group with my peers, my friends, my brother, just telling more people outside of the dynamics of my parents and I, and to be met with the judgment, the fear factor of, wow, this is really big and something very different. Everyone started to treat me differently, and because of that, I started to tuck away inside of myself deeper. I kind of became more inward focused, and that was the message that I just kept getting is like, it's not safe to share this. People don't get it. They're going to judge you. And I think that is where this budding of social stigma and how we limit ourselves dynamically because of it really takes effect. It takes effect with those insidious, kind of seemingly nothing interactions, but the way they change based on that one label, the perceptibility changes so much that you start to not only take note of it, but you pull yourself back to be able to protect yourself, really. I really went into protection mode and protected my secret.
Would you recommend to others who may be walking in your footsteps exactly what would you recommend? Would you recommend that they share what's going on?
I would say know who you're sharing with.
Okay.
and to this day, obviously I'm being very public about my past struggles and my diagnosis with my book. It's out and about. I've also worked myself to the point now where I don't identify with this label anymore. That was a long time coming. That was 16 years of really heavy work and being able to work with different healers, holistic psychiatrists, and to really kind of change my own perception of myself to undo where I was buying myself as being stigmatized and wrong. But even with that, I'm still aware before I share it with someone of this is a person who may judge me for it. It may change our interactions and our relationship. And also, not to make myself wrong because of it. And that's, I think, the bigger thing is, like, if you think that something's wrong and you're keeping it, like, this deep, dark secret that no one can know because it's so judgeable, that will eat away at you in a big, big, big way. So, for me, it's much more starting the conversation with your own inner work, not keeping it a shameful secret for yourself. Then revealing it maybe to those in an inner circle you know you can trust. There's some background. And then from there, who you choose to share it with, be aware of where they may go with that.
I'm talking with Lauren Polly, the author of The Other Side of Bipolar, Revealing Your Strengths to Move Beyond the Diagnosis. Lauren, as you travel through this maze of puzzles and challenges, what did you find the most difficult, and why?
Oh, that's a good question. No one's asked me that yet. I think it was just finding a sense of myself. And I found a sense of myself first, and again, this happened during my teenage years, where the whole thing that teens are going through, they're trying to find out who they are. right?
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Who am I? Where do I fit into socialization? Where can I go in the future? What kind of life do I want? These are the things that teens are looking at. When I was given that label as a teen, that became my defining characteristic. Mm-hmm. So even though it was a deep, dark secret, even though it was something that wasn't safe to share from my perception, I tucked it away. I still had this inner thing with myself where that was the only thing that I really was or ever could be. And I call this kind of the diagnosis trap, where people get a diagnosis and that just becomes so identified with that they stop asking questions mm-hmm. and exploring different aspects of themselves. It's a stop in your evolution process. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, that was always the biggest sticking point, is I would kind of spread my wings a little bit. Like I wanted to try something new or do something a little bit more adventurous. And I would kind of branch my wings out and they would hit almost this invisible box that was around me of like, oh, wait a second, I can't go that big. The doctor mm-hmm. said I can't challenge myself. I might cycle. So it really was this kind of inner thing that I had with myself of being so defined by my diagnosis that I didn't know who I was or who I could be without that.
As you look back and you think about the support that you received from those in your world, what can families do to help one navigate through this maze?
Oh, be there for them. And I when I say that, I mean that with no judgment. And I think that seems to be the hardest thing. You know, your child gets diagnosed with something like this. And I know this because I've watched my parents go through it. And again, I have a very open relationship with them. It's something we talk about quite frequently. The amount of judgment and fear that they went through of like, I failed my child, something's really wrong, I can't fix it, I can't protect her. There's all these inner judgments mm-hmm. that they went into. So they had their own thing that they had to deal with in terms of this diagnosis. I was going through my thing. What really kind of worked with our dynamic was them actually being there as a support system and opening up every avenue that they could to give me different outlets. So I was involved in youth group. That gave me an outlet. I was mm-hmm. a dancer and an actress. I went on modeling auditions. Anything that would burst my self-esteem and allow me to feel more kind of like a normal girl, mm-hmm. more like someone who could actually succeed and do different things, we did it. And that, I think, is kind of, if you look at the end part of my journey, part two of mm-hmm. walking through all these different modalities, I learned that from them because they were always like, you know, if there's another path you can take and add to your life to actually create a sense of space and ease and to really create more of a self-esteem for yourself, then do that. So if you do have teens going through it, you're a friend of one, encourage what they can add to their life that gives them an outlet, allows them to express themselves, and don't try to fix it.
But what I hear you saying real clear is that labeling can be really detrimental because folks can get caught up in this label and find it almost impossible to move beyond it. It's like that labeling defines, and that's the beginning and the end.
It's like the ultimate trap.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And unfortunately, because there is such a fear factor involved, like by the time I was diagnosed, I was scaring myself with my thoughts that were going through. My thoughts had turned very dark. I was scaring myself with my emotional changes that I couldn't quite control, my awareness of everything. That was very scary to me. Then the doctor came in and diagnosed me, and the way he went about it was, again, in fear. There were predictions of what would come down the pike in terms of don't challenge yourself, stress will send you spinning, you can pass it on to your children. There were all these like red
mm-hmm.
flags.
Mm-hmm.
And that made me even more scared. So it was like I became so scared of myself that even the idea of moving beyond that label and just exploring something different really wasn't even accessible to me at that time. It was only until I met a holistic psychiatrist when I was 20, an mm-hmm. angel sent from heaven. He was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
He was the one who actually started to look at different things we could do to develop all aspects of my care, not just medications.
Well, what
and
did
really start pushing me? Yeah.
I was going to ask you, what did diagnosis involve?
Oh, goodness. I had seen multiple medical professionals during that time. I had educational testing to see if I had a learning disability. I went to a couple of different pediatric general doctors to make sure there wasn't something off with my body chemistry. So there were needles and pokes and prodding with that. I had been to two different psychotherapists, which was more talk therapy, and that was basically to make sure that I wasn't suicidal, and I was somewhat stable to kind of wait to get me into this bigger clinic where I was going to see a lot of different psychiatrists to actually label and diagnose me. It was a whole big show, basically. And when I did get to that big clinic, it was the ink blot test, which I think we all know from, like, horror movies or kind of like those crime shows where they show you the big black spots on the white paper.
Yeah, the Rorschach, yes.
I know, like, what is it? And for me, being, I was just so confused. I'm like, I don't know what you want me to say. It's a big blob of black ink on a white sheet of paper.
Yeah. And that's what it was.
And that's what it was, you know, but it was fascinating. Like, I could tell they were, like, looking for a kink in me or something that was wrong. And at that point, again, I was in such fear of what was going on. I really wanted someone to say, this is what's wrong. This is how we fix it. Let's move on. And I was more than willing to kind of play along with these ink blot tests and that sort of thing. Like, what can I give you so that you know what's wrong with me and you can start doing your job to fix it? What I didn't realize was that when I got that diagnosis, it was going to be more of a lifelong sentence. And that changed as soon as the word bipolar flew out of his mouth.
Share with the listening audience how they can connect with you and access your book. Where is it?
It is on Amazon, and then it's also in bookstores nationwide at this point. It's being sold overseas as we speak to get to a broader international audience. And then you can find all my information about my coaching, my workshops. I teach a lot about this and how to actually change the judgments of yourself and undo the diagnosis trap and add to your care. And all that's on my website at Lauren Pauley, LAUREN. P as in Peter, OLLY.com.
Lauren, it seems like what I hear you saying really is that the eclectic sort of approach really worked for you. It's really the answer. Looking at a number of different modalities, would you speak to that?
Yeah, that was a game changer for me. And like I said, it was that holistic psychiatrist that I met when I was 20, and I randomly plucked his name out of the phone book when I moved to Florida.
Really? You were reading my mind, because I was going to say, how did you come up with him? How did you?
I was down there, and of course, you know, when you move with this kind of diagnosis, goal number one is to get yourself a doctor. So it wasn't even like setting up my apartment. It was like, first thing first, find a psychiatrist. So I had opened up the phone book, and I went into complete overwhelm. There were, like, five pages of small little prints. This is back in the day before Google, of course. Page after page of different psychiatrists in the area. And there was just one that was outlined in this beautiful green color. And it popped off the page, and underneath psychiatry, it said holistic. And this was, again, back in the 90s before holistic was really a buzzword like it is now. I didn't really know what that entailed. All I knew was that inner thing, that inner voice inside me, that knowing said, that's what you need. And that really changed everything. Literally, it was a holistic approach. In 6 years of treatment, he was the first doctor to talk about stress management, exercise, diet, breath work. We did personality testing to see what kind of field, like professionally, I would be suited well for and succeed at. He just had a way of working with me that was like, you can have a future of your choosing. This doesn't have to be the one thing. And from my work with him over a 3-year period, it really catapulted my own journey over the next 10 years of looking at yoga, meditation, art therapy, energy tools from Access Consciousness, which I facilitate currently, all these different tools that started to really change and opened me up to a broader perception of myself and set myself free from that diagnosis trap.
Well, what role, and I want to look at those tools because those tools are the key. What role, as we look at changes that you had to incorporate into your lifestyle, what role did diet play? What did you find out about diet?
I found out that for myself, when I was feeling very jittery or kind of flayed all over the place, I wasn't really eating well at that time. What I found is listening to my body, and what I mean by that is our body has a way of communicating with us. And unfortunately, the way mental diagnoses are treated, from my perspective, really leaves the body's knowledge way out of the picture. It's much more about the emotional state and talk therapy. I noticed when I was working more with my body and took note of when I ate certain foods, then my body felt calmer. I felt more relaxed. I had more energy. That actually made a huge difference during my day, and I wasn't getting triggered into stress as easily. And it wasn't even a strict diet that really, like a gluten-free or something like that, like it's kind of taught these days. It was more of that constant presence and interaction with my body of, you know what, I ate baked potato tonight, and that made me feel really grounded and homey. Okay, cool, that's a great sensation. So it's something that is a constant play in my world of looking at what my body requires to be balanced, to have the energy that I require. And for me, the diet was a big thing with that. Diet and sleep. I noticed also when I wasn't getting the rest and the rejuvenation that I required, that really, really had an impact on my emotional state.
I am talking with Lauren Polly. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and joining me via phone is Lauren Polly, who shares her story of moving beyond the diagnosis of bipolar to reveal her strengths. Lauren, you have just been fantastic. The information you're sharing is super. Would you, as you look at this aspect of all the different modalities, alternative modalities, they appear to take the negativity associated with bipolar disorder, and they appear to change or adapt that perspective. Would you agree? Because what I hear you saying is, you know, you've gotten more, you're getting more and more in touch with self, more and more in touch with how your body relates to certain things you may put into it. Would you agree that that is what's going on with this alternative modalities?
Absolutely. And I think from my perspective, it's always a question of what can I add to my life? And so often we try to pare things down. You know, if you're just doing medication or just doing therapy or just doing a special kind of diet, for me, that's not really generative. I found that when I followed my awareness and added more to it, in terms of, great, I'm working with my doctor, this is my current medication. Now I'm going to use these life tools in the moment to handle upsets. I'm going to look at my exercise regime so my body gets the movement it requires so I can rest at night. I'm going to look at my diet to make sure I'm feeding it things that my body's happy with and I have a sense of relaxation with it. It was a holistic approach, and I think so often we drop the ball or we want to shift from one modality to another one. For me, it was much more of an inclusive perspective that really changed a lot.
At what point would you recommend that individuals pursue alternative modalities? Even at what point would you recommend that they pursue some type of intervention?
Oh, I would say from the get-go. And my hope is to really look at some of the tools that I talk about in my book, even from a preventative stance. And it doesn't have to be. I think so often we wait for kind of the, like the poop to hit the fan, basically, before we do anything. And if there is a way that we can start talking about mental health empowerment is a term that I like to use, actually empowering people into their mental state, being aware of themselves, being aware of their body and how they interact with the world, it may prevent a lot of these upsets and these bigger things that are happening down the pike. I would say the very first moment that you feel a little bit unbalanced, unwell, or you got something going on, seek something out. I mean, even if it's going to a yoga class, going to a meditation, getting a massage. There's a beautiful technique that I love, and I've noticed a massive change. It's called the Access Bars. It's a very gentle energetic modality where they touch your head. You get to lay down and just receive it. You don't have to do anything. But it takes the edge of that stress, and amps it way, way, way down. So I have that done once a week, and that changes dynamic stuff for me. So you don't have to wait till something really bad happens. I would say the very first sign of it, all of these modalities are out there. They're easily accessible these days, which is a massive gift. It didn't used to be that way at all. Take advantage of it, you know?
Well, it seems like these alternative modalities provided an avenue of hope that was actually absent from with the traditional approach.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the bigger thing. I mean, you can't live without hope. And I mean that as like it's a fuel source for being able to create a life and to actually be happy. Like if you're waking up in the morning and feeling like you don't contribute to the world, you're wasted space, you're never going to be able to move beyond where you currently are, that is detrimental, I think, for anyone. And so if there is a different modality that you can seek out that gives you hope, and allows you really to explore more life-affirming aspects of yourself, I think that's massively important. And for me, I found that every modality that I did gifted it to me in a very different way. Like the yoga allowed me to be in touch with my body. The meditation gave me access to a really quiet place inside and kind of eased my mind up. The energy tools from Access Consciousness, they really work on hitting the self-judgment dynamically. And that in of itself started to spark more hope. So there are different things that you could start playing with right now. Whatever kind of sparks your curiosity, that's where I would kick off, you know?
The real change, as I understand it, as far as the alternative modalities and how they impacted you, was really just a change in perspective, a change, putting a different tag to your experiences. Would you agree on that, or am I headed in the wrong direction?
You're headed in absolutely the right on, nose on the money.
Okay.
And it's fascinating, and this is something I think it's talked about kind of in a variety of different ways and different modalities or spiritual practices, but the one that I teach is Access Consciousness, which is your point of view actually creates your reality. So the point of view that you have about yourself, about how people perceive you, about your place in the world, you actually start to create yourself as such. So with that information, me being diagnosed at that age of 14 and buying that as myself and locking myself in the diagnosis, that was my point of view. And that's what I created as my reality until I was lucky enough to find people who were dangling these golden carrots for me to, like, you can actually come here. I'm like, oh, wow, that actually looks much more fun than where I am right now. Thank you. And I just started to make strides anywhere I possibly could. And then now it's like, cool, if my point of view creates my reality, what point of view could I have about myself, the world, and what I would like to create for my future that would allow me to be happy and create a life that was that I got to be satisfied and really thrive in. And that's been a game changer.
Oh, well, that leads me to my next question of how this evolution, how this relative sensitivity has had an impact on your professional world. I mean, you work in the hospital. You are what, a speech therapist? What are you, an audiologist?
I am.
Yes. I'm a speech therapist. Yes. Do you find that that has aided you in what you do?
Absolutely, and it's aided me in very interesting ways. So if you can remember the very first part of this conversation, we were talking about me being hypersensitive and how that was really kind of leading me down a lost path for myself and one that was overwhelming. Now utilizing these tools and actually knowing that, oh, I'm aware of people on a very deep level, that's actually a gift that I use to work on a deeper level with my patients at the hospital and my clients in my life coaching practice. Because I have that deep level of awareness and I'm willing to go there, I can meet them where they need to be and actually start working with them there. Mm-hmm. So it's a strength that works to my advantage. And then just for myself, when I first started working in the hospital, I can't think of a more intense environment than the intensive care unit. It's extremely fast-paced. You know, there's a lot going on. It's very overstimulated. For me to be able to have these tools and have myself in the midst of all of that has been wonderful. I can deal with people at the end of life stage and not get stuck in their drama and their upset, but actually be there in a spacious way as a support, which is very different than kind of diving into that oversensitive emotional state. So all of these tools, I apply them every single minute, and the hospital's been a massive training ground. And also, you know, way back when, I never thought I could go to school and earn a master's degree. You know, working at one of the top hospitals in the country in an intensive care unit was way out of reach for that 14-year-old girl who was just diagnosed. I was told not to challenge myself.
Right.
Even applying to colleges, I didn't have that in my viewpoint as that was something that was achievable for me. It was only after I started working with the holistic approach that I went, I actually have a brain. I'm very smart, actually, and I have a high level of capacity to work with people. How can I actually utilize this?
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that allowed me to be enlivened in my own life and to give back.
Well, you talk about being put in a box with that diagnosis of bipolar disorder. And just share with our listening audience more about what it means to be in that box. Did you feel closed in? Did it influence your perspective? How did you get out of that box, you know, and prevent that box from limiting you? Because that's a key. That's a key. Most everyone is probably going to go through that diagnosis stage. But the next step one takes is going to make the difference in how you approach life.
Yeah. I think for me, underneath all of it, you know, even when I was diagnosed and I was kind of being this docile little thing of like, oh, doctors, please just fix it. There was always this deep seed of knowing down deep of like, I want a bigger life for myself and I know I'm capable of it. And I think so many people going through mental health issues right now don't feel that way. They feel like they are being thrown around by the world. Always at the effect of everything happening around them, upsets, triggers, left and right. Being able to really tap down into that deeper inner strength that you have, even if it's just a glimmer, that is what I stoked to be able to get out of this box. And I didn't even realize on a cognitive level that I was doing that. It's only kind of, you know, retroflecting back to it that I can see that now. But whatever presented itself as a possibility, as something that was a little bit more expansive, something that was more fun, something that felt more spacious, I went there. It was dance classes, drama classes, modeling in teenage years. It was yoga and meditation, early 20s, energy tools and body work, later 20s, and what I'm doing now. It was just those little carrots and sparkles of possibilities that I didn't blind myself to. I said, you know what, that thing there, that's different. I want to go there. And to be able to empower someone who feels like they have no power to be able to change something that seems unchangeable is really, it seems like a big, big ask and something very difficult, but I did it. It is accessible. It's just a matter of where do you start?
Well, it sounds like a key to your just success has been your ability to utilize your uniqueness in a generative way. Because what we're talking about as far as intervention, treatment, whatever one wants to call it, is that having appreciation that it's different strokes for different folks. I mean, that's what I hear you saying.
Totally, yeah. Well, we live in a world where everything is supposed to be the same, mm-hmm. or you can be different, but you can only be different a little bit. So this, is, I think, comes into play in the teenage years, right? It's like, well, I'm going to be different than that social group because I don't want to be a cheerleader, so I'm going to dye my hair purple and be part of the punk group. You know? But you're still jumping to a different social circle. Like, we're okay to be different, but only by a varying degree. Otherwise, we're looked at as crazy or weird or eccentric or we stand out too much, whatever that is. From my perspective, it's the people who are willing to claim and know that they look at the world differently, they have that perception, and also that they have the ability to interact with it differently, those are the people who can innovate and create things that actually serve the world on a larger level. You know, if you're playing the same game as everyone else, you don't actually affect change here. It's only when you're willing to step outside of the box and look at yourself and the world differently, that's really where these bigger buds of change and possibilities come from.
Mm-hmm. And I think you've touched on this question. I was just getting it to ask you. Is when is a disability a disability? Does that make sense?
An actual disability. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I would say when there's no awareness with it. So like my early years of being sensitive, and like now I utilize that with my clients and my patients, early years having that and not having my awareness of what was going on had it more of a disability. It shot myself in the foot, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So utilizing your difference, the way you put it was brilliant, utilizing it in a generative way. There's another sidestep that we take where most people function from, where we actually take it and utilize it in a degenerative way. So when you're playing into upsetting behaviors or behaviors that you know don't actually create greater in your life, if you don't really know what's going on, you don't have your awareness of the situation, that's when the gifts that you have may feel overwhelming. That's when it's required just to get more information. If you could actually educate yourself about mm-hmm. your uniqueness, what's going on for you, what you're aware of in the world, and what may be going on in your relationships, which I think is a huge conversation, you may start to get more ease for yourself, and then that space to utilize it in a generative way will start to open.
So in other words, you, with the difference, you move beyond the difference, you know, and make that difference work for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, really, yeah, that's what you're doing.
And that's the really cool thing. It's like, how can I make this world work mm-hmm. for me? We're so mm-hmm. often the question that we all face is, how can I fit into the world? I don't ask that question. That's of no relevance to me at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I ask, how can the world work for me? And that puts you in the empowered stance of being able to stand on your own two feet and have enough power to go, I'm creating my life. The buck stops here.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to me to educate myself, to employ tools, to keep myself healthy, and to move forward. And I'm the only one who can really make that choice. No one else can choose that and do that for me.
But a basic component of that, and we only have a couple minutes left, but a basic component of that is developing confidence. And can you share or give clues in developing confidence in a minute?
In 1 minute. Confidence is... stop coming out of how other people perceive you, I think is a big thing. So often we get looped into what other people say we are, and then we start doubting ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
When you can stop doubting yourself and actually go, you know what, I have something to offer here, even though it's different, even though no one here really seems like they're interested, I can still have it for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if maybe there's other people who would be interested. Like, be willing to walk away from the people who make you feel small and seek out the people who allow you to be confident and really sure-footed in yourself.
And I think a part of confidence is engaging in activities, modalities, whatever, that are working for you. If you find something isn't working, it's okay. Everything, it doesn't have to work for everyone. So if it's not working, try something else, because that holistic approach involves looking at a number of different perspectives, a number of different modalities.
Yeah, and I always say there's no paint-by-numbers way to, like, heal yourself or even have a happy life. We all try to find the magic formula, but it's unformulaic. That actually doesn't work. It's by playing and exploring and trying something and going, oh, you know what, that didn't create what I wanted it to. Okay, moving on.
Well, Lauren, thanks so much. We have run out of time. That's it for this edition of 411 Team. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. This edition of 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistant, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Team podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.